Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation. All donations to Mormon Stories are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonstories.org.
So what happened when you did come home?
Well, felt a deep depression. It was hard being alone, and my parents were helpless to save them, I think. I tried very hard. But you have that mantle, you have that idea that you're protected by huge courses of angels and legions of angels and chariots behind you and cherubim with flaming swords and all these things. And you come home and you're just like, armor is off and you're nothing. And you go back to a singles ward in a very highly populated Mormon community and you're nobody, which is cool, I guess. You're humbled.
This is in Redlands.
In Redlands, yeah. So shortly thereafter, I got really depressed. I lost my girl. I realized that at the time, I didn't want to date. I liked the idea of it, but I thought that the girl that I was kind of hoping to marry after I got home was going to be the one. Like, I thought that was my ticket in, you know. It was easy. It was divine. We fell for each other. She's from Utah, actually. Not too far from here, actually. And I just felt like, I don't know what I want to do. Obviously, my parents are getting divorced, so I don't want to dance because I don't want to put my family through the same traumas. That was one of the big elements there. So, I taught classes to just make a little money here and there to save up, but I instantly signed up for college classes. I wanted to go to the BYU. I could have probably gotten a full ride there, a few other places through dance alone, and even my academics. But I knew I had to be near my family to try and save them. So I went to like a commuter college and taking full units and trying to do really good there, but teaching as well. And I just got so depressed. I think the combination of not really wanting to do what I wanted to do, one, and losing that family unit. And when they mentioned the word divorce and my mom gave me a hug, I just felt like, wow, the chains are broke. We're never going to be sealed. We are lost. It was tough. It was really tough on me. But I didn't think less of my parents. I knew that it had to happen. I just thought there's more responsibility on me now. Even more. A lot.
I had the same experience.
Really? Insurmountable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just feel like I'm disconnected from that eternal family.
Yeah.
I'm like on my own.
Now I have to jump generations to be connected. And I was really heavy into the temple. Like I went all the time. I think when I say I went almost 90 times before I went on my mission.
Wow.
Because I had to wait a little while for my visa, so I had time to go a lot, did double sessions, went to San Diego, LA, on vacations, on dance competitions, find the closest temple and go. I loved it. And then afterwards, I did the same. And so it wasn't until my cousin Heidi, or sorry, my sister Lacey, she saw that I was just blue. And she's like, you are a mess.
Sleeping
all day. Just like 130 pounds, just, you know, the leather face that I'd gained from being tanned in Mexico had gone, like I was pasty and gross. And she's like, you're miserable. Let's get your feet wet. You're still sounding like a Mexican. Like I still had this accent when I spoke. It was terrible. She's like, you need to get out of this. And my sister had left the church already. She was only 15 at the time.
Do you know why?
Yeah, she got made fun of brutally for being artistic again. And ironically, I think this is super funny, and she can hear this, and if she hears it, she deserves it. But she was made fun of a girl that said my sister was a whore and a heathen because she wore a lot of makeup and she wore crazy weird outfits that she would make because we were poor. She was creative. And that's gonna be really loud on the podcast when I just said poor. I apologize, viewers and listeners. But she said this, but this girl ended up getting kicked out of BYU for being a lesbian. Changed her name and is now living as a man. So I guess she had some angst that she was building up and was voicing it to my very beautiful and effeminate sister, maybe. So anyways, karma. She left because of that. She didn't believe in it ever. Never really had a testimony. Never felt like it was true. She could care less. That was the thing. She just wasn't religious in her nature. And But she was always sensitive with me being LDS. She was always so good with it. Like if I would mention things or mention a story about my mission, she loved hearing stories about my mission. She loved looking at pictures about it. My parents picked me up for a week. We toured my mission and visited all my wards. So we had that bond of my mission, not necessarily the Mormonism side, but my missionary work, my 2 years where we sacrificed everything. And I think I missed my sister more than anyone while I was on my mission. We were really connected the last few years before I left, and I felt like I needed to be with her to defend her and set a good example. Because I already saw like she was not really buying any of this, and I'm like, no, buy it.
And I should tell the listeners that Lacey competed in the third season of So You Think You Can Dance. And so for those of us who followed So You Think You Can Dance, Lacey's story followed Benji's, and so to hear about their relationship is really cool.
Yeah.
Go back and watch YouTube videos of Lacey dancing and Benji, and you'll connect to why I'm so interested in hearing about Lacey.
Yeah, and she was the first person I ever taught. She was my first student. So it was kind of cool to be like big brother Benji and teach her, and you know, look at her now. She's like a megastar and has like 190,000 followers on Twitter. And
right now?
Yeah, she's on Dancing with the Stars. She's a pro, you know? So she's on one of the top-rated TV shows of all time.
I can't watch that show.
Oh.
Because it's just not as good.
I can't watch any of those
dance
shows.
I'm kidding.
You're not boosting my ego. I don't associate with that other show either anymore. Grateful for it, but
No, but so Lacey's big now.
Bigger. She's a megastar.
Okay.
Yeah, she's up there. And I'm so proud of her. And what's funny is because I was this, you know, this Mormon boy, people just associate her as being this Mormon girl. She's not. I mean, she's always had tattoos showing and this and that, and wears it. Very honest girl. And I adore her for it, her candor. And but going back to that idea when I was just depressed, she knocked on my door one time and she's like, Benji, like I lived in this little out apartment, like this little guest house at the time. She's like, Benji, she's like, wake up. What? I'm like, you know, there's a small competition in 2 weeks. And normally like it takes me like 6-8 weeks to plan for like a big routine. She's like, we've never danced together. This competition, I'm allowed to like dance as an adult. Let's do a routine together. You're depressed. Let's dance your A off, like do it. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. So she dragged me to the dance floor and we rehearsed for a couple hours, put a little routine together, and we ended up winning like the world championships actually 2 weeks later, which is kind of cool. And so I got that bug again to kind of dance, and maybe like, well, I'll ride this out a little bit, save my money, pay for med school. That was still in the back of my mind. So I'm like, all right, I'll do this. And then I ended up competing with my cousin Heidi. We ended up winning that U.S. Open title again. We reclaimed our title, and it was big for us. And I remember I was so...
And for the listeners, Heidi competed with Benji on So You Think You Can Dance in season 2.
She was a finalist. Yes.
So it was kind of Benji and Heidi.
Yeah.
Grew up together.
Yeah.
LDS?
Oh, Heidi is such a great Mormon.
So both LDS. It was kind of epic for Mormons.
Super
to
epic.
To see these Mormons become finalists.
We were the young Osmonds of our brief reality generation. People called us that. They called us the Dancing Osmonds.
Yeah, and it was awesome. They were both fabulous to watch dance. Yeah,
she's awesome. And she's pregnant, by the way. The world, I'm so happy for her. She's going to have a little baby. It's crazy. She's still this big around too, which is funny. Anyway, so finishing that all off with my sister, we danced, and I danced with my cousin Heidi. We reclaimed her title. I remember winning this competition, and it's actually my most viewed video on YouTube. Like you'll even see it the moment that like I'm so excited. We were crying after we finished the dance. It was just like, wow, we did it. We came back. We never thought this would have happened. Awesome. And then I remember taking that bow. And there's this moment where my head drops, and I thought to myself, now what? Like, I've locked myself in a dance room for 6 months. I haven't focused on dating. I go to church, love my family. Dating freaked me out. Seriously, dating freaked me out. I would pretend a lot, but I hated it, hated the idea. It made me feel very awkward. And I just felt like, oh man, what am I doing? You know, what do I do with this? And so I literally thought, okay, now what? Now that this ball has already gotten rolled and I don't need to dedicate myself 9 hours a day doing a routine that I already had that's good for a year. We tour with a routine for a year. What focus do I do? And so then I realized I had like everything kind of hit me. The whole like, you might be gay, Benj. Like, you got to figure this out.
Wait, what was the connection?
I think it was...
For you.
For me, losing that girl on my mission, I felt like she was my ticket in, and losing
ticket
interest,
to what? Heterosexuality?
To get
the Mormon.
To get to the, to finish the next mission, as your mission president always says, to get married and seal in the temple, have a family. start the eternal process. Make it to the celestial kingdom, the highest level of the celestial kingdom. Right. We shoot for excellence in the Mormon church. It's true, right?
Right.
We don't glorify the whole celestial kingdom. We glorify the highest. We glorify the highest celestial part of the celestial kingdom.
And dancers are about excellence, right? I mean, you were about excellence.
IP excellence, John. I'm just kidding. no, but yes. I mean, yes. We are always about excelling and getting better. And that's my MO, always. I'm not the most talented dancer. I'm one of the most successful ones in this
world.
Yeah, this end of the century. I really am. My accolades and the years and my consistency have been, as a competitive dancer, have been very high. And not from talent alone. Maybe part of that. Maybe genetics from my family, because they're awesome. All of my family members are way more talented than I am. I have a good brain for it. I'm very creative. But in the physical kinetic, I'm not built for a dancer's body. I'm not kinetically active in that way. But I am brutally obsessive about how I work. I work harder than anyone, and because of that, I'm better than everyone.
Is there a connection between that and Mormonism at all? Like, did Mormonism inform your...
Totally. Brigham Young. I mean, like, back in the day of the church, you know, we've always heard about, you know, the pilgrims dancing and the pioneers, dancing, and, you know, they would court that way. People would fall in love on the dance floor, and it was a good thing. BYU's always had an amazing ballroom dance company and department, and it used to make more money than the football department. Like, all of those things have been so ingrained and deep in the core of Utah Mormonism. There are more dance studios going down the 15 North Freeway here between Provo, Utah, and Salt Lake City than I think I've ever seen in my whole life, than in New York City, than in Los Angeles combined. Go figure. We push our talents, because we also are very, like I did at the time, we all believe that God has given us talents and abilities, and it is a slap in his face to not develop them to the best of our ability.
Light on a hill.
Bam. Do it. So if that's my shtick, I will make that stick as best as possible.
Did you connect it to the gifts and the Doctrine and Covenants, and this is your gift? And
No, because I was very doctrinally, for a dancer, again, for a kid who graduated high school at 15, didn't have a college experience and counts to 8 for a living, I was pretty doctrinally savvy, I think. And I was very into reading deep doctrine. I thought about Adam God theory all the time. I marveled, how could that be? And, you know, I read discourses and tried to find whatever I could online. At the time, it wasn't as vast as we have now. But I remember just distinguishing the differences between my spiritual gifts, as in, like, you're a child of God, these are your gifts that you can help other children, and then there are talents that we're blessed with that are earthly talents. And I always believe my dancing and my creativity are more earthly talents. Even though later on down the road, even as an active member of the church, I kind of blended that belief a little bit more together, because my dancing, I felt a lot of those keys, not those keys, those gifts, had been engaged through those mediums of art.
Keys. You really thought this through, man.
Totally.
Okay, so you had this aha moment where you win a competition with Heidi, and you realize that dancing might be your calling.
But nevertheless, how... Like, I don't have anything else to focus. Like, dancing's normal for me now. It's back into my body, my blood. Now I have to think about the girl, the wife.
Right.
Yeah. And so it freaked me out. I started hyperventilating all the time. Started getting panic attacks. I got brutally depressed. I always said, I just missed my mission. But really, it's like, I'm scared of this next mission. I'm brutally scared of it. Luckily, shortly thereafter, I was at a dance competition, sitting in my room. I just won the competition, and I'm bummed as can be. I mean, I am depressed. And everyone's like, you just won a great comp, Benj. What's going on? And a good friend of mine's like, dude, like, snap out of it. What's up with you? And I'm like, you know, it just, there's got to be something more. And he's like, hey, have you seen this, by the way? And he opens up his laptop, and he plays a clip from season 1, So You Think You Can Dance. In fact, it was some sort of stream or video of it, of like the last episode of when season 1 winner won. And I watched some of the dancing on it, and I looked at this video, and I'm like, what is this? Like, even 5 years ago, before the mission, like, no dance TV shows, not since like Gong Show, did anyone dance. You know, as a little boy, I used to watch episodes of that, you know, on...
What about Solid Gold? Did you ever see Solid Gold?
My dad was a Solid Gold dancer.
What?
Thank you very much.
What?
Yeah, and my mom danced on Dance Fever. She danced on Gong Show. She won Gong Show. Yeah, I danced on Regis and Kathy Lee as a little boy. Like, we did some of those things, but my era, my generation, it was never cool. It was only maybe some hip-hop on rap music videos, and that was about it. And that was its audience. So, you know, I was made fun of and this and that. So
there was breakdancing, but that came after you. That came before
breaking was
you.
Before me. Breaking was before me. That Popper's Lockers, all that. Yeah. That was wonderful. I still watch those movies all the time, but anything modern on TV, like Star Search was canceled. Like everything was canceled. I literally come home from those 2 year gaps and there's 4 dance TV shows on that are successful. And I didn't watch TV at the time because I was still like, I can't watch TV or movies because I'm still a good Mormon and I want to live by the white handbook still. I was that kind of guy.
Gosh.
Dude, the worst, right? Yeah. Hearing with earrings. Anyways, and tattoos. Yeah, I was that kid. And it wasn't for show. That's what I believed I needed to do. I didn't watch rated R movies. Didn't do anything. And anyways, he shows me this video of that season of So You Think You Can Dance. And I'm like, and literally just that overachiever, that goal driven, I clinged onto something rather than having to date a girl. I'm like, I'm going to win this show.
Okay. So you win this competition with Heidi.
Yeah.
You maybe start getting the sense that dance might be a big part of your future.
Yeah.
And yet you're having panic attacks about the prospect of dating women.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're uber Mormon righteous, living by the white Bible.
Completely. And it got to a point that maybe I should seek help. And so that was the first time I actually spoke to a bishop. Kind of told him I was kind of dealing with it.
What did you say?
I said, I might be struggling with some issues with same gender attraction. And immediately, you can tell he kind of gets weird about it. And I said, I've never done anything. I'm a good boy. But I know that maybe there's that trial that I'm going to be facing. And so he recommended that I go to LDS Family Social Services. I think I went to one therapy session and it was already stuff that I'd already seen, already read about online. Like it really wasn't helpful. The guy that helped me, bless his heart, was so gay. I mean, when he walked in, I mean, he was just an obvious gay. And here he is. He's like, me and my wife. And I'm like, I don't know if I identify with you. I don't know if I can do this. And it kind of more freaked me out than anything.
He seemed more effeminate than you thought of yourself. Is that
Yeah, right? Completely.
Okay.
I don't find myself to be very effeminate. I've never had that issue. I know a lot of guys, what is it? Not Narth, but there's this one other thing. I think it's called Mans. And it's like, it talked about trying to like be back in touch with your inner man, your masculinity. Let's play sports and hug each other like bros. And I've never had that issue. Like, even though I'm a dancer, I consider myself of the most masculine kind. And it's never been, my masculinity has never been in question for me. Never. I'll do creative, funny things. I'll dress and drag. I'll do this and that. But I don't equate that to my natural air about me or the way I act.
You feel like a dude.
Yeah, totally. I'm the biggest Laker fan on planet Earth. Like, and I go to the ball games and I cuss and I throw peanuts at people. Like it's one of those things. Like that's how I am. So no, I've never felt that way ever.
Okay.
Never.
Okay. So,
and he was all about that. So the therapist that was there,
he was
yeah,
all about
I'm like, this, we're going
rediscovering your manhood and you're like,
yeah.
I'm plenty manly.
Yeah. And I always thought it was really gay to say that. Like, let's find your manhood. I'm like, that sounds pornographic. Like, let's let's not say it in that way. I'll make you feel like a man. I'm like, okay, yeah, you will. But it was just weird. And so I got turned off by that and I just decided to not think about it and to literally sell my car, go to school every other day and train for So You Think You Can Dance.
Really?
Yeah.
So how long did you train?
I didn't really train a lot. All I did was this, is I knew that there's all sorts of different styles, and here I am like a partner dancer. That's what I do. And I used to freestyle as a kid. I was like a little wannabe Michael Jackson. But these people, I mean, trained every day in front of a ballet bar, or they're fantastic. And I'm just like a little swing dancer that did some ballroom. I felt really out of my element, so I decided to go to LA and take... I remember I walked in with jeans and a t-shirt. I didn't even know how to dress for it. And I walked in and I'm like, I want to take the hardest dance class you have here.
In an LA studio?
At the LA studio. It's there's like 3 big studios here, but this is like the one that the winner used to train at from the first season.
What's it called?
It's called The Edge.
Okay.
Edge, Millennium, and Demi Reynolds are like the three.
It's expensive, right?
$16 a class, I think, for like an hour and a half. Yeah, but if you're taking five classes a day and you're driving an hour and a half back and forth every day, or 2 hours in traffic,
right?
You know, and you're not working because you're going to school,
right?
It's expensive. So I sold my car. I bought a really crappy beat up car. It was awesome, and I wanted to do it. I just wanted to go for it. And I, for some reason, in the back of my head, ignorantly, I just knew I was going to win this show. Knew it. It wasn't even an issue. Like, I remember I walked in and they're like, well, have you ever taken a Jazz 4 class before, which is like the highest class they have there? And I'm like, no, never have. I'm like, we have to get special permission from the teacher. And I walked in jeans, you know, and this girl's like, you're helpless. I'm like, can I please take this class? She's like, oh, what? Let me guess, you want to be on So You Think You Can Dance? And because everyone and their mother decided to do it the next year, right? And I told her, I'm like, I said, actually, with all due respect, no. And she went, oh, I'm like, I said, I want to win So You Think You Can Dance. And she just laughed at me. She's like, you got some cojones, man. All right, come on in. She's like, but guess what? I'm not going to be nice to you. And I'm like, I said, I wouldn't have any other way. And she mutilated me. I mean, we would do warm ups across the floor. The warm up alone, I'm like, oh, the class is over. No, that was just 5 minutes, Benj. And I'm like, oh, man, here we go. Because I was this skinny, like 130 pound twerpy guy that had a tapeworm from Mexico that couldn't gain weight.
So this was jazz?
Jazz, and then I took hip-hop and contemporary.
Over a how many month period?
Two.
Over 2 months?
Yeah, it wasn't very long.
So you
long.
Got crash courses in advanced forms of...
Yeah, well, obviously I didn't, because they don't teach how to do it. They just say, move here, move it, now do it, group one. And I'm like literally like the kid that's five beats behind, and my feet are like this, and I'm awkward. And but I wanted this. I wanted the mental thing. I knew that the experience, I wasn't going to be able to compete against dancers that have been doing this since they were 12, or two, rather. They start at two, and they go all the way up. Most of these kids are 18, 19, 20 years old. I don't have that luxury, but I'm a kick-butt partner, and I can do anything in that realm, right? And I got a good personality. But I was thinking, what do I do for a solo? Well, I'll just do partner dancing without a partner. Okay, so I figured that out. But all I needed to do was, like, how I wanted to see how good these people were. I wanted to see where I need to get my brain in order to process where these people are at.
So there's this metacognitive piece of just
completely
getting the lay of the land.
Yeah.
Right? Of, like, understanding the realm.
Yes. I walked around and I studied and tasted everything. To know.
So what it was? Jazz.
It was jazz, modern? Contemporary, modern, hip hop, jazz funk, which is a mixture between hip hop and jazz. I can't use the word, but there's like another version where it's like, it's called Zaza. We'll just call it that. Where it's like, it's basically girl hip hop or like gay hip hop, okay. Where it's like really effeminate. But I figured, you know what? I've seen everything on that show. I'm gonna take it, and I'm gonna do good. And if not, okay. I will try. And I remember the next day, that same teacher was having a class. And Lord, she looked at me. I came in there with sweatpants and a tank top that next day, right? I even took the garments off, which is a little weird for me to dance. I used to practice in my garments, which I called my bishop. He was like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. You know, swimmers don't wear them, you know. So I'm like, all right. But I came in there and I was like, ready. And she looked at me. She's like, you're back for some more punishment. She called me Swing Boy. I won't name this, but she turns out to be one of the top choreographers on So You Think You Can Dance. And I didn't know who she was.
Oh.
Yeah. So, because I didn't watch the season.
And
I
you just, don't want to name her because it's just uncool.
It's just whatever. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
She's
all
great.
Right,
she's good. Very talented. That's okay. All I'll say.
All right. That's cool.
And she told me, and everyone would know her if I even mentioned her initials, so it's fine. But she was so mean to me, but cool mean, though. Like, she would literally run up to me and, like, break fingers and, you know, morph me in different ways. And I'm like, all right, cool. And I remember, like, the day before the auditions, 2 months later, fast forward this. Now, mind you, I was probably still absolutely terrible. Terrible. But at the very end of class, she picks her five or six top dancers and she makes them all dance together, improvise, and then dance their piece, like the routine that you learned for that day. And she called me as one of the people, which touched me, you know, like gave me this little boost of like, maybe I'm getting a little better, you know, maybe I've learned something. And she was really sweet upon doing that. And it kind of gave me this little, probably a false sense of confidence, but something that really helped me at least ignorantly get my foot through the door. And the next day, that same night, me and my best friend, Ricky, he's a break dancer. We decided to audition the same day. And I slept in a sleeping bag downtown LA bums were peeing on us. Like, it was so bad. And we woke up the next day. I was the 10th person in line and auditioned that very day.
What's that like auditioning for So You Think You Can Dance? What's it like?
Well, for people that don't know the show, it's American Idol on dance. That's all it is. It's the exact same premise for the most part, except however rigorous it is to sing a long high note, it's a lot more rigorous to physically do every genre there is. You can't even put your spin on it because you're doing someone else's work.
But when you're auditioning, you don't do all the genres,
you
right?
You do. You audition in all the... Well, they don't show half the audition process.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
it's not just get up on stage for 3 minutes and
no.
dance.
No. And in fact, the first time... Okay, now, the first person auditioning and they do this whole, like, thing...
This
like,
is Nigel, right?
Yeah, or whomever. Yeah, I just do a British accent. It's one of them. But you go up there and it's you've already done, like, 3 rounds of auditioning before you get up to that point.
Really?
They already know about you. They've already gone to your house. They feel...
So when they put the goofy dancers on, they're doing that for show.
No, here's the thing. They'll give you, like, you dance in front of a casting director in, like, this basement, and there's a little table, and they put 10 dancers on the floor at a time, and they're like, impress us. They play a song. And here I am by myself, and my partner hadn't showed up yet, because, you know, during that round, you can dance with a partner. And I'm thinking, oh, crud. So I'm like doing ballroom by myself and doing whatever I could. And I remember at one point the guy that was casting, it didn't even look at me. I mean, he saw that I was different. He saw that I had a tie on rather than like jazz clothes and stuff like this. And didn't even look. I mean, he was very like very just gay and like, I don't want to look at this, right? My hair was messy. I had no I was a nerd, you know, and I was a goofy Mormon nerd. That's what I was. And I'm dancing around in a corner, getting pushed away by all these beautiful dancers that are just wonderful and eloquently moving and fluid and musically perfect. And here I am trying to survive and keep up. So finally, at one point, right before the very end, I knew he was not marking me down. And I spun and I did like this slide on my foot right towards him. And I slammed the table right in front of the thing. And I grab the pen and I write my number in his casting list. And I go back and I smile at him. And he looks at me like that mother effer. Like he was so mad. But he put me through because of it. Because he liked
So you may have been out that very first.
Oh, I knew I was.
So you went for it.
I went for it, dude. I'm like, this is, I do not want to go back to my singles ward and have to worry about getting in this me market of dating again. Like, I want to go to an LA ward. I want to be focused on my career and doing that. And so, yeah, he sent me through. And then a couple days later, then you go on that stage. But you wear the same clothes. They keep your hair the same way. They're very good about that. It's an interesting process.
Okay. And you performed... a swing dance for
I
that
did with my current professional partner Tori. She was 14 at the time.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it was
okay.
Kind of cool. She's 13 at the time actually, and so I couldn't dance with Lacey because Lacey was gone on some sort of trip.
And Heidi
was living in New York at the time.
Okay,
and we would get together and do an occasional swing dance event, but she had a full time ballroom partner, who was Dimitri, who was also on Dancing
right.
with the Stars, who was also a top 10 finalist
right.
on So You Think You Dance, our same
So
season.
She auditioned in New York?
With Dimitri.
Unbelievable.
Crazy,
okay,
right?
Okay, okay.
So we didn't even, like, we weren't even paired up, and, like, they didn't know until later, right? And so when I auditioned, I remember, like, some of the disliked me, some of the didn't. I had to do hip-hop, I had to do jazz dance, I had to do all these other subcategories, and for some reason I survived. I did. I don't know how. I didn't think I would because I remember one of the choreographers that was doing this was looking at me rolling his eyes the whole time and purposely trying to like just stare me down and burn me. He wanted me to break. And he said really bad things, really insulting things off camera to me that I'm glad weren't actually put on camera. I mean, really bad stuff. Like, it was bad. And I think they did it to kind of make me feel dramatic. I mean, they were setting me up the whole time. They're really good about that. Like, they probably thought I was going to be at least sent to the next round, which is Vegas. And so they're like, you know, he's a good partner dancer. He could be entertaining. We'll cut him there. And that was their plan. Nigel told me that.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't think I was going to be on the show.
He didn't?
Nah. He told us that the day before the results of the final show, he brought out the top four, brought us to lunch, and kind of said, ask anything except who's going to win tomorrow. And so we asked a lot of questions. It was actually kind of cool. It's kind of like talking to the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. You know, like, let's see, what is this really all about? Because we know this smoke is all BS, you know? It's
BS, what do you mean?
Bullshit.
What do you mean, though?
I know. Meaning, you know, the only thing that we knew that was real was the results, right? The final results, that's all real. Everything else... is still you sign a contract where it's at the discretion of the producers, Nigel, in an essence. If he wants to send someone else home, even if they didn't number-wise deserve it, he could send him home. He could save people too, you know? And so I thought that was really interesting. He told me that I went through Vegas week, I danced, saved my life, whatever, made the show.
So was that, like, was that grueling?
Oh my gosh. Well, the worst thing was, is when I was waiting, like they said, they sent me to Vegas, and of course I cried on national television, super embarrassing, whatever. And I got a ticket to Vegas and I cried. I think it was because I was investing so much of this. I mean, honestly, looking back on the whole gay side of things, I was like, cool, I might have a career. Like, if I can be on a TV show, I might get some exposure to be able to take care of myself and a family at one day.
So were you running from your gayness?
Totally.
And you, were you feeling
in
like...
dance, of all things, which is really ironic.
And you were feeling like God was...
on my side.
On your side.
Yeah, I felt like I fasted once a week. From the time I auditioned for So You Think to the time I finished the show. And I prayed him. I said, Heavenly Father, all I'm fasting is to be safe, to keep my health. Bless the people of Oaxaca and my family. And then I said, but could you please let me not win this show? Or no, could, no, I said this, could you please not let me make this show if I'm going to lose my way spiritually in the process of getting into Hollywood or getting into TV. If I'm going to go the gay route, like if I'm going to falter, and if you want me to go to BYU or something like that to be safe, we can talk about that later. But, you know, then make sure I don't make this. Break my knees. Let me not get casted, you know. And I remember the day after Vegas week, after that all happened, because that's a whole nother week. That's
Wait, so you cried on national LA. Television when you
made
got,
it to Vegas.
How many people go from LA to Vegas?
Like, 300, so many, right? But out of 12,000, so that's still kind of cool.
12,000?
Yeah, nationwide, right? So it's a big, it's kind of a big to-do, and most of those people are professional dancers that have worked on TV, music videos, and here I am, like, dancing with a partner, and I thought it was really cheesy because all the partner dancers that were on the season prior were ballroom dancers, but they had, like, the perfect bodies and face, and I had neither of that. I had no sex appeal. I was the antithesis to music video dancer. Right. So for me, I'm like, how do I do this? But I'm going to win this. I just knew it. And so I made it to Vegas. Vegas was really grueling and people just started getting dropped like flies. And
how did you survive? What do you think it was?
I slept with every judge. I don't know. Nothing. No, I didn't. But like we also had 2 months again break from LA to Vegas. So I quit school then and I'm like every day I'm training. And I trained my butt off.
Back at
my dance studio, I trained with my parents, I watched videos of, I watched the whole entire season. I memorized everyone's routine. If I can get through this, then I can get through whatever those choreographers give me the next time.
So there's the boy standing in front of the TV doing
same
the choreography.
Exact thing. And I didn't have the money at this time because I wasn't
working. Who would think
that
thing you did as a child, you'd literally do as an adult?
Completely. To this day.
Right?
Oh, you can play.
It's just some crazy little boy dancing in front of a TV.
That was terrible.
Now as a returned missionary, you're doing it.
On a laptop. I downloaded illegally all the episodes of the show because I came home from my mission when the show was still going. I only just saw the end because my friend was playing that last episode.
Oh.
And you know, I watched everything and I learned about the winners. I learned, you know, why people might have liked them on the camera and then on the dance floor because it's two separate games, right? And I found out that you're casted by two groups. You're casted by production and you're casted by choreographers. And I was not casted by the choreographers in Vegas week. They even do like a 500 question to see if you're schizophrenic because, you know, they're liable for you. They house us during that time. And if someone starts stabbing everyone in their sleep, they're completely liable. And they had these former FBI agents do background checks and investigations. We had to confess to them about anything we've ever done. I remember like all of the other people, there's like a top 40 at this point, and they would like go in and everyone would just walk out crying. And here I am, this good Mormon boy that's never done anything.
It sure shook you up, baby.
I walked in and it was literally 10 seconds. They're like, what are you? I'm like, I'm LDS. They're like, bye. And I'm like, thanks, see you later. Everyone else is crying. I had this naked picture online. And that was the easiest test of the whole experience, you know? So
wait, when you were suffering through Vegas,
yeah,
that didn't just happen randomly. If you have to dig deep and be honest about your talents and abilities, what do you think it was that helped you make it through the grueling nature of the Vegas auditions?
Well, they don't do this anymore, but in our Vegas audition, they almost kind of starved us both without food and sleep one night. Because at the end of the show, they learn from the finale from the prior season. You're learning five routines, two group numbers, doing a couple of solos within 2 days' time. You're not sleeping. You're not eating. You're dancing the whole time. And they want to see who can cut it physically. I actually thought it was really cool. But people were passing out. People were breaking ankles, vomiting on stage. It was bad. They didn't show any of that, though, on TV because it looked too torturous, I think. But I lived in Oaxaca, Mexico for 2 years. Bring it.
Really?
Yeah. I ate bugs. Like, this is nothing to me. Sometimes we went without food for a couple of days because the members were too poor to give us food and we had no money. Bring it.
So it was your Mormon experience that
totally.
Sort of
my mission.
Prepared you.
My mission to this day is still the utmost, I don't know, it's the biggest training I've ever had in life experience to deal with anything. And so I'm forever grateful of that. You know, like that's still active in my life today. So yeah, it was. So I was like, this sucks. And people are like crying and complaining, but it's like, I used to get stung by scorpions in my sleep. Like, this is not that bad. And we're on TV, folks. This is really cool, you know? And so while people were like this in the background corner, I was in front of one of the television cameras cracking jokes. Because they ask us to. They're like, you know, you're judged for two things. How you are personally with that, the camera, and how you are on the dance floor as a dancer.
And do you think you were an inferior dancer to many of the people you competed with?
Coming from the perfectionist inside of me says that, yes. And comparatively speaking, I'm pretty kick-ass now in a lot of genres of dance.
So you're a better dancer now than you were then?
I'm 10 times the dancer now than I was then. Wow. And teacher and choreographer and visual. Just artistically speaking,
okay.
10 times, tenfold. Thanks to that experience, in a nutshell, while I was there, there were a lot of fun little hardships, but when I actually made the show and I'd been fasting that whole day for the results, now they make it seem like you're still in Vegas, but really it's like another 2 months later. And so I remember they had to recut our hair, we had to wear the same colors. It's in a Hollywood backdrop. It's not even at the hotel in Vegas where
That's
we're at.
That's weird.
It's a green screen.
That's weird.
It's so totally weird. But you watch it and one of the choreographers couldn't be back on it because she decided to cut her hair off. And so like it was only like Nigel and Mary and like, you know, Shane Sparks or somebody. And they messed with me while I was in Los Angeles. They made me cry. They knew they can push my buttons. But I, in the end, they waited out. I was not casted originally. I was boy number 11, the alternate.
What?
On So You Think You Can Dance season 2. Crazy, right? I think it's kind of cool. I was boy number 11. And the boy that was casted in my place, like the nerdy all-American kid, failed his psych test.
Oh, bummer.
Miserably too. I found out what happened. I'm not going to divulge, but some crazy stuff, some cray cray stuff. So thanks to him and a very awkward thing he likes to do. I want to say it so bad, but
no, I'm not.
I made the show last minute. It was like a very.
How did they make
decision.
It look like you got the announcement with the other 10 and that it was?
Oh, that happened all together. So
okay,
remind me,
okay.
Vegas happened.
Okay.
We all auditioned. There was 20. Oh, there's 40 people left. They cut that in half, but they have 2 months to cast it. So they did all the background checks and found out.
Okay.
Through the grapevine. So he was cast up until a week prior, and they found something.
Okay.
And then we got to bring him in.
Got it.
And because of that, they paired me up with this hip-hop dancer who's still a great friend, Danielle, my partner. I love her to death. She recently just got married. She's absolutely awesome, talented, just one of the most badass people I've ever met in my life, and wonderfully humble and spiritual and beautiful people I've ever met. And we connected so well. But they put her with me because I was this scrawny, little cheesy, nerdy goofball, right, that had no soul in him, apparently. And mind you, another 2 months to, like, you know, get in shape a little bit. And then she's this this voluptuous, beautiful, attacking hard hip-hop dancer. Like, polar opposites. And, of course, we draw hip-hop the first week, which is planned.
So you guys were paired from the start.
Oh,
that
they
was
paired
your partner at the beginning.
We don't find out to the day of, but they knew. They had a game plan. And Nigel told me at that special dinner, the Willy Wonka touring through, you know, Wonka land, he told me, he's like, we purposely gave you hip hop on the first week and an awesome hip hop dancer that's voluptuous. And you guys are not ergonomically matched like most of the couples are here to get you knocked out. You were an alternate. We wanted you out. And of course, again, the whole, I'm gonna prove you wrong, like Danielle, I looked at her, I said, listen, you're gonna have to help me through this, but I guarantee you I'm not gonna fail you as a partner. And she's like, I have no doubt. And so we were the only couple. I don't know if we're the only couple in the history of the show. I haven't watched it since my sister's season, but we're the only couple at the time that has never gotten to the bottom, like that ever had a dance for their lives. So theoretically, we're the most successful couple ever on the show.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what was the show like?
Awesome.
Was it every week? You do it every week?
Every week. And it was tedious and time-consuming and crazy. We all lived together, so competitors have to live with each other, but you might be partnered with each other another day, so you don't want to kill each other. So it's part like Big Brother, like part Survivor, where you create alliances in their ward. There was actually like a small little like secret combination, and I hated them. But
so kind of like a what's the TV show with the islands, and you're trying to
Survivor, yeah,
a little bit of Survivor.
Yeah, there was you create alliances. We didn't. I was trying to be friends with everybody, and I was kind of rejected. People knew that I was this weirdo that doesn't really belong there, and so I either got along really well with them, or they just absolutely didn't even talk to me, cast members.
But Heidi was on, right?
So yeah.
So she was part of the alliance?
I didn't have an alliance. I was cool with everyone.
Okay.
I was Switzerland.
So let's talk about the main part of So You Think You Can Dance. So what's it like, what's it like with the different performers or contestants? What's it like with the judges? What's it like week to week?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
It's scary. I mean, it's fun. The best part of it is, I remember the first day we walked out on the live taping, and there's a crowd there, and there are people with your name, like signs, just, you don't even know who they are. And they watch just auditions, and they've already formed fans, like of different people. And we were just blown away by it. I remember they said, here are your top 20 dancers. And we walked out before the cameras rolled, before it was live TV. And the eruption was beyond overwhelming. All of us just kind of stood there. I remember seeing like Nigel like smiling, just like so happy because he's like, we have a hit this year and it's such a big thing. And we were cracking up about that, but it was overwhelming. And every day, every week, it became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the fans became more extreme, more extreme, more extreme.
Okay, so is it being televised each week as it's happening?
Yes, yes. So they record everything live, meaning there's no second takes, no this and that, but it airs later on. It airs a day later.
Okay.
Right. So in case like a nipple slip or a cuss word, they can edit that stuff out, but they keep the integrity of the dances intact.
So when we're watching it, okay, but
it was
when
the
studio audience is seeing it, it's a day before
the performance day. Yes. Yes.
Okay, okay.
Now they've changed it now because one of the results show has been canceled for this season. I don't speak for on behalf of So You Think You Can Dance. Grateful for the experience, but I'm not a part of that show anymore. But in our era, they had the live performance recording, and they would play that on a different day.
Okay.
And then when that show aired that day, the very next day, I think we had one day in between. So it'd be like a Monday, it was on Tuesday, we'd have results on Wednesday.
Okay.
And that was live. That's completely live.
Okay.
The result show.
Okay.
Where you have to dance for your solo, you do. The only thing that wasn't live was the group routines that we do. We'd film that earlier on in the mornings with a separate group of extras that would walk in and pretend to be an audience. So we could be in costume, focus on that, get a lot of camera angles, rehearse it, perform it like 5 or 6 times so they got every good angle. And in case someone really flubbed up, they wanted it to look as best as possible because those numbers are graded in Emmys. They can win Emmys. So they want them to be as elaborate and as beautiful as they can. So that's the only time where it was not, where everything's like pre-recorded and could be done over and over and over again, because it's not a part of the competition, theoretically. And other than that, though, I mean, we would draw a name out of a hat. We'd have our partner for the first half of the show. Then the second half of the season, you'd have a new partner every week. And you dance with that person. You have 3 hours on camera. No, sorry, I lie. 1.5 hours on camera to learn the routine from the choreographer with your partner that day.
Is that not enough time?
That's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was used to doing 3-minute dance numbers and swing dancing and taking 6 weeks to choreograph something. So not at all, you know. And we would have that, and the next day you'd have 3 hours off camera to tech it. So normally we would learn like maybe the hard moves for 1.5 hours, and it's good TV if someone falls on their face or whatever, like doing a big stunt, it's great for camera, yada yada yada. But sometimes these choreographers wouldn't know what they were doing. They wouldn't be inspired. And it's hard. I've also choreographed on that show and international variations of the show as well. And, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Like, you're a specialist in your dance, but they might be completely polar opposite. So that's always, you know, it's a weird science and a chemical reaction. So we do that for 3 hours the next day. And then that night, you can't find rehearsal time. We're kind of locked in like this apartment complex. So we have this little gym, but there's not enough space and the neighbors would complain and this and that. So we'd be like in our rooms, or we'd all get together, like kind of like the groups that wanted to rehearse with each other. Me and my partner Danielle would rehearse a lot of the times with Heidi, and a couple of others, and we would get together. It was always us, basically, where we would get together and go back and forth and just give each other retroalimentation and constructive criticism. And you know, if someone was a specialist in the room in that subject, we'd grab onto them because we would help them the next week with our specialty.
So they would help each other?
Half would. Uh-huh. And half were so damn naturally talented that they would just do what was asked of them and go and party. Or they love the Hollywood lifestyle.
They could go out and party? You weren't like quarantined?
No, they would party in their rooms. Like, they would just go out and like have a party, like get into each other's rooms and, you know, drink or do other activities. And they would. And it was about half and half. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of drugs, though. I mean, I'm Word of Wisdom boy here, so I was good, but there was a lot of drugs.
Just performance enhancing or just?
No, definitely not.
Just anxiety reducing?
Just recreational, illegal, illicit drugs.
Okay. All right.
The kind that you would be arrested if you were selling.
Okay.
So, yeah, but.
Not the Mormons, though, right?
No, I'm just kidding. I will not give or divulge any names, but, you know, it was a very interesting time because it was very chaotic behind the scenes. People were both competing against each other, but knew that they needed each other to help each other out. It was this really weird love-hate relationship with a lot of the people there. I just kind of stayed out of it. I tried to be friends with everybody. Some people didn't like me, and I just stayed away from them, plain and simple. But there would always be comments, like sometimes when we would like rehearse the opening number or something, and I would do a movement or something, you'd hear like a little. So at that point, it's like maybe I was one of the older ones on the show. There's a lot of 18-year-olds, and I just looked at it as like I was out of high school at 15. Like, grow the heck up. Like, whatever. I just didn't really care. But, you know, half the choreographers were that way. Half the choreographers were brilliant and wonderful, and the others were talentless. Some were talentless. Some were ridiculously brilliant and amazing and technical and wonderful. Some were ridiculously brilliant but also narcissistic and just demeaning and terrible. And some were on drugs coming in there. Some were drunk. It was an interesting experience, you know.
So not all the judges are top-notch, world-class talent.
No. And in fact,
Not
all the choreographers. I had to. Most of them are. Don't get me wrong. Most of them are like the elite
in
of their
genre.
Field, of their
yeah.
genre, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's a couple of old maids out there that are just not good.
Okay.
And there were even moments, I remember one couple, and I'm not going to name the couple, but earlier on in the season, they got a guy who lied on his resume and got hired to do something. Never worked with these people that he ever did. Walked in there, wanted to get on TV, and left. And they had nothing. They had to come up with something last minute. They just kind of shook their butts on the stage. It was bad.
Oh.
But the thing is, with me at that time, I was already a choreographer in swing. And I'm more better here than I am in the physical anyways. So I would ask questions, and I was good about, you know, using the how do you say it in English? El modelo de compromiso.
Commitment pattern?
Commitment pattern. Yeah, I would use the commitment pattern on a lot of the choreographers if I didn't like the move without saying, I don't like this, and getting on their bad side and then judging me the next week and hating me. I'd be like, okay, so is it like this, or I'd do my version to make it a lot better?
Not sneaky.
Like, you have to play that game because in the end, it is your voice that you're projecting. They give you the inspiration, the palette, the colors to use, but you really are painting the picture. And in the end, they're voting about you, not the choreographer. And I think I had an advantage in that sense because I was very aware of what would sell and what didn't. I had that. I felt inspired in that sense of what was good, what would be projected and readable and what wasn't.
Were there choreographers you really loved? Or
yes.
Do you talk about the positive relationships at all, or do you just not like to talk about people by name at all?
You know what's funny is the dynamic changes, though. So being the student, right, there were a couple choreographers. There's a couple choreographers this day that if I see them, I will just do this to them. Like, I love them dearly. And
you don't want to say their names.
I don't want
to. That's fine. No, I just want to. And why is that? Just so that I can learn what the
business
is. Because
it's a process of elimination. So if I was to say the ones that I like, you already know which ones I didn't.
Got it. Okay.
Just to protect everyone in that sense, out of respect to their careers and
all they've done. So there were some you loved.
Oh, there were some that I absolutely loved. Yeah. Some that hated me, but I loved that. Like, beat me down. I'm a totally masochistic, like, perfectionist person when it comes to
performing. They hated you, like, really didn't
love. They hated me, hated my dancing, hated my personality, hated my style, hated everything.
And they would come at you.
But I would tell them, it's okay. And I would work harder for them than anyone. Do it. There was one in particular, and I don't think he would have a problem. He even admitted this. Brian Friedman on the show. And I think he's beyond brilliant. And he hated me when I auditioned in L.A. He hated me when I auditioned in Las Vegas. Did not want me to go on. He said this on TV, so you could see it. But... I drew him like my third week, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to lose this week. I'm going home. I'm packing my bags.
Why?
Because he hated me. Okay. He was out to just get me out. And he's like, he just literally walked in. He's like, if you don't get this and pick it up really quickly, you're going to go home. And I'm like, just ready to go. I had nightmares about seeing him the day before. Like, it was bad. And he worked with us, and I remember, like, I would fall. He would tell me to drop, and I would just do it, and I would do it 120%. Even if it was bad, like, he did see that I was working my butt off. And by the end, when we performed it and it got like a standing ovation, and we actually gave his piece justice, like, he was cool with me. Like, and I earned my stripes theoretically in that sense. And he's been really cool with me ever since, actually. It's been really nice. However, after leaving the show and choreographing on the show, or becoming a professional in different genres and exploring different realms, or taking some of their jobs, or being, you know, agencies putting us up against each other with our choreography reels or this
right,
and that,
right.
Some, not him, but other people, some of the dynamics with the choreographers that I absolutely loved, it's that whole, like, it's the can't leave the nest here. You're my chicken here. I have a wing over you. And frankly, if I'm doing a better job than you, or if I got the job, congratulate me, critique me too, but don't hate me. And that happened a lot. Mm. The problem with dance is we're all artists. We're all sensitive people. We've all developed really weird stigmas about our bodies, about how we move, about how we act, because we look at a mirror 24/7. We're constantly in critique. And we're constantly fighting ourselves. We're constantly competing against other dancers that we only know. We only know the dance life, so we're friends with everyone, but we're also the most bitter of competitive enemies. And it's a really weird dichotomy. And luckily, I had friends from church. And I had friends that I didn't necessarily compete against, but we all social dance and dance together. So I had a good group of friends, and it didn't bother me. But, you know, for these people that live in Hollywood, they eat, sleep, breathe the audition process, which I loathe.
Mm.
I did So You Think You Can Dance and one music video audition, and that was it.
Mm.
I'm good. If you want my stuff, I have a reel. You can look at it. Hire me or don't. I'm good.
What can you say about Nigel and Mary? That you're comfortable saying.
There's a funny, I didn't even know this.
These are two of the main judges on the show.
Yeah, two of the main judges. Nigel's the executive producer, co-creator of the show. Nigel's first and foremost a businessman. You know, he makes the show succeed, and he's kept a dance show without any celebrity names that are attached to it alive for 9 seasons. That's pretty brilliant. He's one of the brains behind American Idol, too, even though he doesn't claim a lot of it.
Yeah, his name's on the...
Well, there's another Nigel, too, but yeah, his name is on there. Nigel's brilliant in that sense. I mean, he did some choreography in his day, and for someone who isn't, quote-unquote, a true dancer, like, that just dedicates himself to that craft, he's got a good natural eye for what will sell on TV and what won't. And he's really good about picking who's going to win within a week or two. And he picked the top six the first week that we were on.
And you were one of them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
I proved him wrong that day. He's like, oh, he'll be in the final.
Nice.
And so he's good in that sense. But Nigel's a businessman. Like, he's the executive producer. He's a busy man. So you don't really grow close with him. You seldom see him.
You don't hang out with Nigel.
No, I don't. But he likes...
I mean, during the performance, during the competition.
No, not at all. In fact, the idea is you don't fraternize with judges, so you're not supposed to see them.
Oh, okay.
The only time they see you is on a dress rehearsal the day of the show, and they sit down without makeup, and they sit in their chairs, and they take notes about what they want to critique us on.
Oh, so they... Yeah.
Oh, they see it.
It's not first time. So when they're reacting like, whoa, that changed my life, they will have already seen it.
But they could have changed your lives, because usually they're really bad dress rehearsals. I mean, we're just putting these things together, and it's because of the adrenaline and the, like, Russian roulette aspect of being on the show that we pull things out of our butts.
Okay. So you're running on adrenaline.
Oh, you are. And that's why I think sometimes when they are floored, they're like, whoa, like, because it was really bad. I would even sometimes, if I knew that I had a really good piece, trip in a dress rehearsal, or miss one thing in particular, one element that I knew that it would probably look for, and I would nail it on the floor.
That's evil.
It is.
That's evil.
But you know what, though? If they're going to play that game, where I've never cheated, I never tried hurting someone else, I never spoke poorly of people on the show, I always helped everyone, like, I was always about that, bring the best competition, will bring the best out of me. But, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they talk about you guys during the show with such affection that you get the sense that you're, like, having lunch and dinner together and hanging out.
No, but I think they do feel, like, parental in a certain sense, because they're giving us guides and they understand what's at stake for us. You know what I mean? Like they see the fact that this could affect our lives for 6 weeks, 6 months, really, if you include auditions and tour, can affect the rest of our lives greatly.
And they're sensitive to that.
I think they're very sensitive to that. And a lot of the ones that they see are dedicated, even if they're not going to make it, they're very good about it, and they'll be complimentary. Now, those that have really bad egos or that are not good with them on camera, but are not selling to the general public, see you later. Get an attitude adjustment, and they'll put you in check. There's a couple people with bad attitudes my season, and they put them in check. A couple people with bad attitudes off camera, but great ones on camera, so they let them stay.
So what do you say about Mary? Is Mary still on the show? She was off for a while.
Did Don't ask me about anything new. I have no idea.
Okay.
But I would assume so. Mary's awesome. Mary, I think, was present when I was born. She's from San Diego. She's a dance studio owner, and my parents were like...
So you guys went back, go back.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know Mary very well. She knew of me, though. I think, like, she was at an event when my mom fell into labor or something, and, like, all these dancers were there. Hmm. In fact, people that run the BYU Department of Dance, like, they were there when
wow.
I was born. So I've had pictures of them, you know, holding me in my weird, like, you know, clay face, and they are holding me, and little do I know that this person's going to be judging me 22 years later. Kind of cool. But Mary was awesome, and she tried to fight for the partner dancers because we were always like the second tier people. We were always considered lesser than.
Really?
Oh, very much so. Even behind the scenes, costumes that we would get, the way people would talk to us, the choreographers wouldn't be nice to us. Like, we were the ones that couldn't dance by ourselves. So if we ever did something that wasn't with a partner, we were the lesser than kind of crowd. I think I'm still the only partner dancer that's ever won the show. But I also worked my butt off, you know, like, it wasn't just the partner element, and I wanted to prove them wrong. That's like a theme in my life, you know, prove them wrong.
Prove them wrong, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a really interesting. So Mary was very supportive, but Mary was supportive of everybody. She is Mama Hen for sure. Her and the host, Kat Deely, were always just, they
Kat.
Loved everybody. Okay. So, yeah. Anyway,
did you get to hang with Kat?
I got to hang with Kat after the show. She was with us a lot more because she would do, like, the dress rehearsals and
Kat is reads. This British blonde
beautiful
babe.
She's
sorry,
beautiful.
Margie. Babe.
And,
yeah.
And she, what's funny, she looks like she's 9 feet tall. She's shorter than I am.
Oh.
But she wears these heels, and we're half the time we're barefoot on the show. So we're like, she has hair in the dress, and you know, at times she would mess with us. Like, you know, she usually puts her arm around us when we're getting judges' critiques.
Yep, yep.
And if it's a bad one, she would, like, massage us. But if it's a good one, she'd be giving me a wedgie.
What?
Like, she's just like that. She's absolutely wonderful and super cool and beautiful with or without, you know, the makeup inside and out. I love her. She's wonderful. I got to kiss her on New Year's, too. It was kind
what?
Of amazing. We did, like, this performance for Fox New Year's Eve. And, yeah, so the ball dropped and we were there. And I kiss Kat Deely. I'll say that with pride and arousal. So it's good.
What's it like when you're, what's it like with the, what was it like to have so many Mormons or Utah people sort of in the same?
Yeah. I think there was four on my cast, out of 20 that were LDS, myself and my cousin included. And, you know, every week, you know, someone's in the bottom two or bottom three and they have to, like, dance for their life, kind of like sing for your life. Anyways, so it literally would be weekly where I would have to give someone a blessing. And I was known as the return missionary. Like, I wore my CTR ring, and some people were active, some people were inactive, some people believed, some people didn't. But every week I gave a blessing to somebody on that show.
And what would the blessing be, basically?
It would just be to be calm, to be safe, to have health, to be clear of thoughts. Heavenly Father loves you. I mean, you've been given a great talent and a great opportunity. Relish in it, whether it's going to be cut today or extended to the very end of the show. I think that was usually kind of the sentiment that I felt inspired to say.
And what was your religious mojo or connection or disposition as you were going through the show?
Very strong. In fact, I was very well aware, I believe, because I was fasting and praying, that God wanted me to do this. God wanted me to be on this. I was going to be successful. I said, if I make this show, I'm going to win it, Heavenly Father. So that's not cocky. Like, I never believed I was a better dancer than anyone on that show. I cried the day after I won the show because I felt so guilty for winning. I said, I want to give the check back. I want to give it all back. I offered my contract for Celine Dion to one of the other dancers in the top four. I turned it down. I said, I don't deserve this. You guys are all better dancers than I am. And all four of you survived this epic warfare for all this time along with me. I feel completely undeserving of this. So it wasn't that element.
You genuinely didn't feel deserving?
Not at all. I mean, I just had this deep-rooted feeling that I was supposed to win that show. I really did. I felt it was my destiny. That's a better way to put it.
It's crazy. Do you think other the dancers had the same feeling?
I think the dancers just wanted to win a lot of money or get a lot of fame. I didn't care about that stuff. I just knew I was supposed to win this dance show. I did. Plain and simple. And I never voiced that to any of them. I didn't want to make that sound like I was cocky. I knew I was one of the worst ones there. I knew I was one of the least experienced ones. I just got back from my mission. I didn't have my dancer body there. It was tough. In and out of all that, my spiritual thing was this. I would read my scriptures every morning. I'd have my own devotional. I would listen to hymns in my iPod at the time, which I was really amazed by because I didn't have those before my mission. And come home from Mexico and you have an iPod and what is this madness? So all I had was like church music on it anyways. And I would either be doing that or practicing my pieces for the week. That's it. Never once did anything else. And I lived, breathed, and slept either my dancing. And when I braked, I didn't chill. I didn't watch TV. I had my nose in the scriptures.
Really?
I really felt a sense that, one, I need to stay on my toes. Because at first they told us we couldn't even go to church. And Heidi and I, my cousin Heidi and I, and some of the other LDS people sometimes would come with us too, we would actually sneak out. There was this fire escape that we would go, and there's security that walked the perimeter of this place. I mean, it was jammed tight. His name's Patrick. He hated me because we would always see us sneaking out. And like, we're going to church no matter what. And Heidi and I would sneak out to go to a sacrament meeting in the Santa Monica First Ward, which is like a big Hollywood ward. And it was really cool, actually. We would go out and do it, and we'd run right back and before rehearsal started. Mm. And so Heidi and I would always go to sacrament meeting. And I felt like that was very integral and very important to us because we believed that Heavenly Father was both giving us, one, an opportunity that was so big, and it was only because of our obedience that we were getting that blessing, and two, we were representing Mormons on a TV show. I mean, that was a very big element to it. My bishop told me when I found out I was casted to go on the show, he's like, you shouldn't go on the show. It's going to ruin your soul. It's going to damn your soul. I'm like, well, I've prayed about this. And at the time, I understood the idea of infallible servitude being a load of crap. So I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. The Lord says I should. So I'm going. And but I remember after the first week, I did a hip-hop routine. And I had a MySpace at the time. Facebook wasn't really that big. And I got probably 5,000 emails that night, just from LDS people alone. And a good 3,000 of them were geared towards hate. Like, you're a bad example. Hmm. You should not be gyrating on TV with a girl. And they would
really?
Even say, like, a black girl.
Did you
of
save
all things.
Those?
I can go on my MySpace. I still have it. I don't know. Check it. But, you know, I still have all those emails. I mean,
what was that like to get those emails? There were good ones too, right?
I was going to say that, you know, there's a 50-50 thing we talked about earlier on, about 50% that get it and don't. And, the other ones were like so complimentary. And like, there are other people that said, you know what? I just let the missionaries in because I found out you wore a CTRing and they did. Like, little things like that. I've gotten a lot of emails saying, you know, we got baptized because we saw that Mormons were actually semi-normal. They could handle living in this world, being themselves, but also be of the world, you know, just not in it, or be in the world, not, I don't know, whatever that phrase is. So, it was weird. I felt a severe, heavy responsibility. I think even the Salt Lake Tribune wrote a really bad article about me the first week. I think they called it the gyrating ex-missionary, not a elder or return missionary, anything like that. So, you know, on my MySpace that first week, we would get all sorts of really bad emails and good emails. There's lots of them. But beyond that, there was even in the Salt Lake Tribune, there was an article that called me like the gyrating ex-missionary. Hmm. And how it was a poor example of showing like really bad conduct with the girl, and how it was just really depressing for the church and making us look like bad people.
But this is like the Mormon,
the
part
same
of the
day
Mormon
also,
moment,
yeah,
right?
The same day I mentioned I was a missionary And then I also started a non-for-profit helping underprivileged kids in northern Mexico. I mean, come on. You know, it was bad.
You were doing what the choreographers had you do, right?
Well, not only that, though. Like, there were moments that I actually asked the choreographer, you know, I really don't feel comfortable doing this. And could we please just do something else? I'll flip. I'll stand on my head. I will pull my fingers back if you want me to, but can we change this just, you know, easily? Not a problem. It was never an issue. And the funny thing is, when I dance, whether it's with a guy or a girl, by myself, I'm not aroused either way. Like, when I'm dancing, I'm so concentrated on movement, not sex.
Yeah.
In any way, shape, or form. And it's just not the emotion that you feel when you're a trained dancer at all. So for someone to say that, one, is both ignorant and completely untrue. So a couple weeks later, though, through the grapevine, I heard it was from one of the 12, apparently, that kind of said, you need to put in a rebuttal to this article. And it was said that, you know, they sent this new picture of me, like, me as a missionary with a white shirt and tie, saying, like, return missionary sets good example on, you know, reality TV, you know, Mormons can dance or something like that. And so after that article came out, I noticed...
It came out where?
Probably a couple weeks into it, maybe like 3 or 4
in
weeks into
it. Desert News?
I want to say it was the Salt Lake Tribune,
okay.
I think.
Okay.
I don't remember. But to be honest with you, it was really interesting because after that week, I saw this article and I got even more hate mail. And one thing they told us to do is to stay away from reading email messages. But I was the kind, I want to know exactly what the people are thinking, what they like, what they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are the people that are ultimately deciding my fate here.
Right.
So I was very adamant. I read every message board. And I mean, I read all the hate message boards in particular. What do people hate about me? I don't care what they like, because I'm on the right track then. I did that. It's a total
game. Would you change how you performed based on feedback you got?
You know, yeah, a little bit. Not how I would perform, but maybe some of my conduct. I would make sure if a group of people finds this hyper offensive, it wasn't my intention. I don't want to offend anybody. So I was very conscious of not trying to hurt people. As missionaries do too, you don't want to offend anyone that you're around to gain better success. And it was kind of the same thing. So, but after that positive article came out, there would be hordes of people from BYU. They would have these, like, excursions from BYU where people would, like, carpool and come down, and they would have, it would say CTB. They would have these CTB
songs. Choose the Benji?
Choose the Benji songs, right? And it was awesome. And people would, like, hold up, like, the I love you, like the Taylor Swift sign, but I totally did that before she was even alive almost, right? But yeah, like, they did all that, and it was so supportive and so well. Even a bully from my junior high school that... he and I never spoke after the fact. He was in the audience one time with a sign that said, I am so sorry, Benji, you rock.
Whoa.
And I was like, whoa. You know, kind of cool how, you know, because I'm a dancer, it went full circle. You know, it's kind of neat that sticking with that passion, it's very blessed. It was a very validating time in my life as a dancer. It validated my dance as both a Mormon and a dancer, and how that's cool and appealing, and millions of people kind of like it.
So in your mind, were you dancing for you? Were you dancing for Mormonism or the church? What were you, you know?
All of the above.
You were like...
Are we not all a part of the same church body? I mean, is that not what we really are? Are we not a movement? Are we not all perfect collectively, but not individually? Yeah, of course. I felt that. I felt that I had to set an example. But more than anything, I took joy from people saying thank you for making us look normal a little bit, that we can dance and we can do these things.
Mormons,
yeah, members of the church. It was wonderful. It was wonderful to see that. And you would still get hate emails, but you have to develop kind of a thick skin really quickly, because I nearly quit the show the second weekend.
What?
After I read that article, and I thought to myself, Heavenly Father, am I being deceived by Satan here?
Because your bishop's sort of warnings.
That warning,
in the back of your
plus
mind.
All this hate mail, maybe the Mormons know better than I do. The Utah crowd knows it a lot better than me being a California Sunday Mormon almost all my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. And I thought, geez, you know, what a conflict. Like, am I going to hell? Like, am I really that, is am I that prideful to think that I'm being deceived right now and I'm thinking it's God talking to me? And then the thing that got me out of it was not only that article, but it was the fact that the same voice that told me to keep going, you know, that same feeling and vibe is the same voice and feeling that I felt on my mission. So if that was false, or if that was just my head or a psychological break or lapse, then it's all bad, all or nothing.
Yeah.
prove them wrong.
So the same inspiration that was leading you through So You Think You Can Dance was the was what you felt in your mission.
And it was for my family. During the time while we were on the show, part of my dance studio caught on fire. We don't know how it happened, but we lost a lot of income from it. And I'm thinking, gosh, you know, $100,000 in this moment, I don't care about it for myself. That could really help us out. Mm-hmm. That could really help my family out. You know, that would be wonderful. And my parents were actually officially divorced while I was on the live tapings.
Oh, no.
And my mom, my mom was like, after the divorce was final, she brought in like a guy that she dated that she met on like Mormon Mingle or something. It was fun. I don't care. Like, I'm all about them dating at that point. And they'd been separated for so long. At that point, it was just like, this is cool. You know, find happiness. Both you get sealed in the temple. Do good, you know. And I'm with them, and I would see them in the audience, like, dad sits here, mom sits there, sister and friends are in the middle. But they were all there in good spirit, and it wasn't really anything different than I'd not seen in the last 10, 20 years of my life. So,
do you have a couple favorite numbers that you perform that are just really memorable for you? Or,
well, I love the group numbers just because it was all about performance. It wasn't a competition. It was all about entertainment. So I love doing, like, it won an Emmy, the Ramalama piece that we did by Wade Robson. I think the top 10 did that originally, and the whole cast did it again at the end of the season. It's the only number that's been repeated 3 times ever on So You Think You Can Dance, and it won an Emmy. We got to dress up like dead people. I mean, you know, how cool is that? I had finger waves in my hair.
Is that Shane Sparks?
Wade Robson.
Oh, that's right, Wade Robson. Yeah. Love that guy.
He's brilliant, yeah.
Love
he
that guy.
He and I actually
guy.
Both have the same mental disorder. It's synesthesia, where your senses are crossed. I see sound. And he sees sound like that too. There's a couple of us, we've all talked, and like, do you see like ribbons coming out of the speakers or over your eyelids sometimes? And like, yeah. Or when you move, you see like energy trails and vapors and this and that.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he is. He is.
That was a great number.
He's Michael Jackson's protege.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love that piece. I loved Brian Freeman. I loved, I really liked, I loved all the pieces. I actually really liked one of the pieces that I do with my cousin Heidi, the Black Mambo that we did. And it got hailed as one of the best pieces of the season. I really loved doing that. One, it was with my cousin. But two, I choreographed most of it.
Oh.
The teacher that we had, unfortunately, he gave us some pieces. Things didn't fit with the music. And we had to make last minute decisions where we threw a lot of our swing element into it and used our experience together as a couple to kind of compensate for. He gave us a couple of fun moves, but other than that, it was most of our stuff.
Wow.
So it was kind of fun to put our swing into a different medium, which was really cool. And that was my first taste of experimenting with hybrid genres, which is what I do now for the most part. I'll mix samba with contemporary jazz, or I'll mix Viennese waltz with hip hop and teach that. And it's a lot of fun, and I make money off of it, so it's cool. One of my first experiences doing that. I love doing the piece with Travis. That was our nerdy dance. We called it the Trangy dance, which sounds really bad to me. Sounds like tranny. But he and I did that. We choreographed everything but 3 counts of eight of that, because our choreographer had to go and choreograph a movie that day.
Wow.
He had like 30 minutes with us. And they were going to dress, funny story about that, they were going to dress us up like gangsters. We were going to wear bulletproof vests and like bandanas. And it's like he and like the punk rock ballerina and the nerdy closeted gay swing dancer that's Mormon, right? Like dressing up like thugs was not going to cut it. So we're like, why don't we just like nerds and just hit it as hard as we can and strip, pull our shirts off at one point and, you know, do a strip tease with a backpack and glasses and this and that. And it, you know, that was, I think, arguably the most popular piece of the season, other than a couple other ones done by some other choreographers and dancers. So
the pieces that were most epic for me were when you were soloing. I don't know how many times you did a solo dance, but just
5.
When you,
because I never was in the bottom. I had to dance for the 5 weeks where we were independently voted for.
Yeah, when you were just, it was just running around. Just
I improvised all those. I never once had choreography.
It just, you carried this happiness, this energy, this charisma, this fun.
Yeah.
The energy was just unbelievable.
Think about it. The very first time that I ever did something like that, other than when I was like a 4-year-old kid thinking I was Michael Jackson, I had no influences this time. It was just me doing me, celebrating that there's an audience of 16 million people watching me in this moment. It's my own. I have a jungle gym of a floor and stairs, and I don't have a partner with me, so it's not me being a good partner. It is just me. And that's really weird. And I remember sitting there, and we were supposed to practice our solos before, like on a dress rehearsal, and the judges are watching, and I tried doing something choreographed, and it failed miserably.
So you would just go out and do your thing.
Last minute, I was supposed to start in the center of the stage with this thing that I'd tried choreographing, and it was terrible. It was like, I was supposed to be like this hobo jazz person. It was terrible. And so I'm like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to do me. Like, my brain was already fried with everyone else's choreography and influence. There's too many voices at the time. I'm like, I just need to go out there. So literally 30 seconds before it started, I'm like, I'm going to start on top of the stairs. I'm going to slide down.
What about the cameraman?
I told him. I told him, cameraman, camera five, I'm going to be up there. I remember seeing the judges looking at me like, what is he doing? And I'm like, I just got to do this. And so, you know, it was one of those things where
That's really risky, though.
Yeah.
But like, you know, good comedy isn't extemporaneous. It's very well planned and orchestrated.
I would disagree with you, because Will Ferrell and Jim Carrey have made billions almost in improvisation.
I'm just saying that it's safer.
Well crafted, yes.
It's safer to go the careful route.
Maybe, but in this case, you're representing you, and the best way that I can be me is to just be present, not to think about. I'm a hyper analytical, over analytical person, to go out there and just be me. Because I was always playing these characters too. Like, I was always the hip hop dude, or this regal debonair guy, or something, or a tree, or a zombie. And it would be really nice to go out there, play the music that I like to listen to, which is so far from what everyone else was listening to. I mean, I was playing like Land of a Thousand Dances. I was playing Jackie Wilson. I was playing like old school stuff and like indie rock. I was playing all these different people, and which is what I loved. And it was awesome to actually put that on the show, because it had never been done before. Kind of like this old soul with boyish charm thing, right? And no one's really done that. It was always trying to be like MTV generation. And I'm like, screw that.
Yeah.
But they have enough of that all day long. But when I put on a tie and suit pants and spats, you know, and slide on the floor like Fred Astaire, it's new for most people. And my biggest influences, for the most part, other than Michael Jackson and my family, are Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, in particular, Donald O'Connor, Make Him Laugh from, yeah, I think he was...
Singing in the Rain,
brilliant. One of my favorite pieces of all time. So using all those elements and those solo moments were, you know, what a feeling in Flashdance. She just went out and did her own thing finally after she tried doing something else. And a lot of it, I think that influenced just, this was my 80s solo climatic movie moment. And
what's that like, being in the zone, being in the moment?
It's electricity.
Of being you when, in a competition watched by tens of millions of people.
When you add my synesthesia, so when the music really connects with me and I'm on a different plane, right? We call it living in the dance community. When he's living, like, meaning he's living in the heavens of dance right now. He's not just dancing or performing, but he's living.
It's kind of, it's a different...
It's out of body.
Reality, right?
It's out of body. It is. It's a different reality. You see people's faces, but it's like a canvas. It's not... And nothing's in 3D. I'm performing for one unit. And my goal is to share the energy, whatever, whether it's blue or red or green or black or whatever it is. I am painting the entire room with that energy, and they will feel it by the time I'm done. And I only had 30 seconds to do it. And plus that, it's like, it's just a rush. People are screaming your name and chanting you. Like, I'm this little dancer from Redlands that sold his car, that drives the crappiest car on planet Earth, that will never have a girlfriend probably. And here I am, like, wow, you know, this is my megastar moment. You know, it'll never get better than that in that sense. And I knew it, and I just was really appreciative of it. I just knew it was going to be cool. It's just so much fun, you know. I'm never going to be that guy that's going to star in a movie and be a leading lady just for my face. You know, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to have that ability. But, you know, damn it, I'm going to dance. I'm going to dance my butt off right now and have a great time doing it. And it was just, those are the moments where I could actually breathe. They were never stressful for me.
But like, if you trip or hurt yourself, it's over.
I'd play it off. But see, you say trip or this and that, but I'm also, I work my butt off and I train. So I'm not going to fall. Again, I was going to win the show. It was my show.
So you weren't like, oh my gosh, what if I mess up?
No. In fact, the first thing, I was just fighting it. I was sitting there in the middle of that stage and I'm like, forget this. Going up in the stage, I'm starting here, let's do this. 3, 2, 1, commercial break back, and here he is, Benji, boom. And I didn't know what I was going to do, and I just did it. It was awesome. It was fun. My favorite parts of those moments, like those are my favorite parts. Not winning a competition or seeing someone go, but rather being me and just moving. Movement. and emotion and expression. It was my way to get out the stress of the weekend, you know. And but to perform, I could see every single eyeball there, and I would make sure that I would peer into something or every camera. Like it was very easy for me to like know where camera 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 and follow the crane that was following me. I would, my whole dance would change based upon where the cameras were going. I was, you're just in that weird matrix like zone where everything's slower. Adrenaline.
So what's it like to be dancing as your authentic self? What's going on in your mind in terms of your struggle with your sexuality and with God as you're moving closer and closer to winning? What are you thinking about this battle that you're having inside about your sexuality?
The only time it ever came into question was when I started developing a crush on one of the boys on the show. And
one of the dancers.
One of my competitors.
Was he gay or do you know?
They're all gay, except for maybe like two of them. I think all but two guys on our cast are gay, and that's usually the case on every single season. I love seeing these girls like, I'm still going to marry him, and it's like, sure you will.
So you say 8 out of 10 of the male dancers.
I'd say 80% of the guys that have been on that show, other than like a lot of the break dancers and some of the ballroom boys. Break dancers and ballroom boys, you have a good chance that they're straight. Anything else? No. And I'm not saying any names, you know, because I respect their discretion. But, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I started developing a crush on one of them, and he had a crush on me. And he kept reminding me and saying, he's like, you remind me so much of my ex-boyfriend. He used to be Mormon.
Did people date on the show? Were there behind-the-scenes romance kind of things?
Yeah. Okay. People hooked up. People had crushes. People cheated on each other. Like, it was fun. I mean, it was definitely
fun.
It could have been a second reality show if they had cameras going on where we lived.
But you weren't into that.
No. I was that guy that was rehearsing crying because he couldn't get his pieces together at 3 a.m, averaging 4 hours of sleep a night. Fasting, reading my scriptures, dancing.
Giving blessings to the other Mormons.
Or massages to my dance partners, or helping out people with partnering work.
Okay, but you developed a crush.
Yeah. And it was weird because it was one of those things like with that missionary companion that I had. It was not like, I want to do you. It wasn't that. It wasn't carnal like that at all. In fact, looking back now in retrospect, has that ever been said on Mormon stories?
I want to do you? No, I don't think so.
Let's be honest. Yeah, it was never like that. I never felt like I was hitting on somebody, probably because I was so closeted at the time and so repressed that it was more about, again, it was this infatuation. Like, I feel a really great connection. And my head still thinking, I think we're just meant to be like the best kindred spirit soulmates ever. I really feel that way. And now in retrospect, I looked at all the girls that I dated and I think that we're kindred spirits, but not soulmates. And I flipped that all around. But yeah, he and I, it was funny because, you know, we're all competing against each other, but we would extra help each other out and give each other extra help and like extra critiques on each other's work. And we would, you know, like the same movies, and like we ended up being roommates the whole time too, which was even weirder because I'm playing house with this boy that I'm kind of into, but ignorantly into. So it was like being with that elder way back when, where I just couldn't wait to wake up and see him.
But it wasn't like I'm fighting off jumping him.
Any sexual aggression, none whatsoever. There was only two moments where there was like, is this the awkward moment that people talk about when they're about to kiss for the first time? And I was there one moment we were reading those message boards online, and there was like a fan site of gay men that liked us. But they had, but everyone had that, right? But there was like these Photoshop pictures.
So it's
of
like,
us.
Dude, there's a gay site of men who like us.
I'd be like, oh, let me see. That's so weird. Yeah, it's so awkward, right? It's so bad. But long story short, there's one thing. They're like, I bet you right now. There's like Photoshop pictures of us like kissing, and but there was me with everyone in the show. There was like that. Everyone had their fan set of like, I want these two people to hook up. It wasn't just exclusively us. And I remember it was really funny because someone even said right now, I bet you they're sitting next to each other, legs slightly touching, reading this, and it's going to be very awkward for both of them. Boom.
And you were?
Like music stopped on the playlist. Yeah, it was so cinematic, you know, and I'm like, and it was awkward as all heck. I could feel his knee was touching mine, and I'm like the first thing that thought to me, like, God put me here. Like, I'm deserving of this only in the sense that I'm choosing the right and not choosing the Benji. theoretically. So I'd be like, okay, good night. See you, bro. Bro hug, you know? And you would see, like he'd be like, okay, sure. So I'd go straight to bed. And eventually ended up switching rooms because I didn't want to be around that, like next to him in the same bed. So we would, there's a room with four beds, and one and two beds at the other, and I would be in the other room. But
did you tell him? Did you say, hey, I'm switching?
Never.
How did he know?
One day, just my stuff was moved.
Was that kind of weird for him, probably?
Yeah, and then at one point, you know, they bring all the cast back. So even though, you know, some of us got eliminated, I saw him. We reunited. We were all putting our costumes on for the final opening number, and everyone from the cast goes there. And he, of course, we were sharing a dressing room. And we decided to share a dressing room, even though we didn't need to, right? And so we're sharing a dressing room. And I think one of the producers who's gay, he saw it happening, like, throughout our rehearsals. He just knew that there was this vibe. Like, he picked up on it pretty easily. And he always paired us up, always. Always. He just wanted it to happen. And I guess he said he used to work for the Osmonds, so he knew all about Mormon culture. So he was trying to get me out, and quick. And I remember this is the day of the results show, right? So everyone's getting ready. It's all exciting. And I'm like nervous and exhausted. I went to the hospital that day for dehydration, and I was spitting up and coughing up blood. It was bad. I was just ready to finish it. I didn't care what happened at this point. I didn't think I was going to win either, because I had Travis, who was my partner from the week prior. I had Heidi, who's my dance partner, totally, and Danielle, who was my partner. So theoretically, I was the only boy that shared votes with all these people. So I knew I didn't make it. When I made it to the finale, and then the fourth place girl was Natalie Fotopoulos, who was also my partner. So I felt, as a partner dancer, I did my due diligence. All of my partners were the top placed partners on the show. Mm-hmm. I felt like that is the biggest accomplishment I've ever
made. All your partners look good.
Yeah. And that was my responsibility. I truly felt that. And yeah, so I was like, I'm good. Fourth place. Here we go. I'm going to go on tour. This is awesome. Exposure up the wazoo. So good. So we're in the dressing room, sharing the dressing room. And ironically, you know, we were put together by that producer. I knew it. And I'm putting on my tie, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, your tie's on crooked. He's like, I got it. And he's adjusting my tie, right? And he's literally, at first he's pulling the tie out and he's adjusting it. And then he's pulling the tie in closer to me. And at first I was so spaced out, like nervous about the results, and he wasn't, that it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm getting close. Oh my gosh, our lips are this close. Like, that's weird. This is awkward. And literally, like, I could feel like exchanging of breath. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. And this is the only moment where I'm like, I want to do you, you know, like it was one of those moments. And I'm like, and I remember he was holding on to my tie, pulling me in. He wanted to go further, but he was waiting for me to like
take
to initiate and take the next step. And so I literally went like this. I grabbed his wrist. I'm like, let's say a prayer before we go on stage, literally. And you can tell he was just like, oh, okay. All right. And we did. We said a prayer and we went out. I'm like, I love you, buddy.
You were just Mormoned up, man.
Telling you, man.
Dang. Yeah, because, I mean, here you are for the first time in your life.
Exposed.
Well, presented with the opportunity to engage in male-to-male intimacy.
Yeah.
Right?
Where I cared about this person.
But in that same day or week, I don't know when the results come out, but you're potentially,
you have the potential
to become the Mormon celebrity.
Yeah.
For the year.
And I looked at it as like my final trial. And I remember...
Yeah, it's like so many things coming to a head in an epic way, right?
I ran to the fire exit, the fire stair exit right there, right afterwards. Immediately afterwards. I'll see you, love you, but I got to go run and warm up. And I ran to the exit and I just knelt down in prayer and I just cried my eyes out.
What'd you say?
I just told Heavenly Father that I was sorry for even getting that close to temptation.
There's part of you that wanted it, or not?
Of course. Okay. I felt like I was in an enamored position with him, this kid. And I remember saying, you know, Satan must be really good because this feels awesome. And I don't feel bad doing it. I just feel like it would be an insult to you. I remember feeling that and being honest with Heavenly Father at that moment, thinking, I don't feel like kissing him would be bad, but I feel like it's through my obedience thus far. And this was kind of my final trial. And I knew, I just said, I better win this dang thing now. Like, if I'm giving up on this right now, like, you know, it's one of those things where I just felt, okay, there's this balance in the air, and I think I know the path that I need to choose. So I did, and 2 hours later I won, which was weird and awesome and weird and awkward and guilt-ridden, and I don't know. I think
as, how was Heidi about it?
Oh, beyond supportive. She was so cool about
it. Was she heartbroken too?
No, she told me I was going to win.
Really?
From the second week, she's like, "Oh my gosh, you're going to freaking win this thing." And not competitively speaking, she's like, "You're going to freaking win this, Benj." And I'm like, "No, you are." You know, it was always like, "No, you are. I don't know. I think you're going to do it." And she was really hot at the time. She'd just done the Benj piece, and she'd done a couple of really good pieces.
She was really good.
So she had a great momentum, and I thought she could have gotten it. I thought Travis could have gotten it. The girls loved him. I thought Danielle could definitely have gotten it because she was the most dynamic and versatile performer there. And I thought maybe she was the reason why I kept making it through each round because she carried me. So, you know, I didn't think, it's like I knew I was going to win for my destiny's sake, but I didn't think I actually was going to win. It's a really weird how you can split your brain up in that way. Nevertheless, I did, and it was a very weird experience. Forever grateful, but it was a blur. And I remember flying that night, you know, the cast party was on and I couldn't go. I had to catch a red eye to do Regis and Kelly. And I remember that was the first time I saw any clips from the show. I decided not to watch myself. Because I would probably hate myself, and I did. I saw clips of the show, and I'm like...
You don't like to watch yourself?
Hate it.
What?
You need to hear your voice, for instance.
Yeah.
On a cell phone.
Yeah, but your dancing's cool.
No. At the time, it wasn't. I think my dancing's pretty cool now, but at the time, it was pretty terrible, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I thought I was... There was moments that I had that were really fun, and I was unique, and mm-hmm. I was...
Entertaining.
Entertaining and a breath of fresh air. Entertaining all around, and I knew how to work TV, but I just felt like there was just so much talent with me in that cast that I didn't really deserve the recognition that I was getting. But I almost always feel that way. There's this split personality where the perfectionistic dancer says you suck, but there's that dedicated, driven dancer that says you've worked harder than anyone, you will win this. And it's always this balance, but it's kind of a nice balance. I never feel like my head gets too big, but on the flip side, I never feel like I'm defeated all the way. So it works for me. It's okay. Worked thus far for 28 years. So,
so you were at Regis and Kathleen. What was Kelly
at the time?
Regis and Kelly. Yeah. Sorry. I love those. I love both of them. They're funny.
They're great.
So what was the celebrity tour you did?
I did 10 days of press. I was a guest weatherman for a national news thing. And I was just messing around and like dancing in the green screen and having fun and. I did that. I toured a couple Broadway things, did a couple things here and there.
Like Letterman or Leno or any of that?
Didn't do any of that. The show wasn't really, it was kind of competitive with them because it was a nighttime show, so they never really had us on at the time. Now they do because they know that they'll get a lot more ratings if you bring them onto your show because it's a popular thing now. But no, I never did that. I did daytime stuff a little bit. But, you know, those were all just great and they treated you great, but I also realized how temporary that all was. I always kept thinking in the back of my mind, I'm probably going to end up being like a dance teacher or something. Like I'm not going to be very outwardly successful other than the dance thing. And this is going to die down. Like this will be on for another 2 seasons. And then the dance craze as it comes in and out every 10 years will die down, but I'll have a career and I'll be grateful for it. So I never thought I was going to be like living the life of luxury. And some people have, I've seen a couple people that didn't even win. And they're just like, we are red carpet. Like we are everything. And I never felt that way. I was excited to pay a lot of tithing the next week. I thought that'd be kind of cool with a huge check. And I'm like, doo, 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 to my bishop and kind of rubbed it in his face a little bit. And it was good. And it was kind of neat. Maybe they built a stake center in Mexico from that. Who knows? But, after that, we went on tour, and tour was wonderful because it was just a chance to give back to the fans that couldn't come to our shows live. And it was just pandemonious. It was beautiful and so much fun. Behind the scenes, though, after having won that half of the group, it's like church and the world. 50-50 get it. They're great and supportive and fun, and half of them don't. Half of them would hide my costumes. Half of them would put water where I would enter on a stage. Yet the other half would be my friends and defend me. I mean, it was bad. Half of them would purposely take my cues on microphone entrances so that I would mess up my lines.
Wow.
There's a lot of vindictive behavior.
Mm.
And of course, it never was as bad as the good was, as being able to perform and sell out Madison Square Garden for 2 days straight, having the fastest selling commercial dance tour in history to this day. I mean, that's way big for us, for dancers that don't make any money. They don't have insurance. They don't have unions that really help us in the way they should. It's pretty cool. So tour happened, and then tour ended, and that was that's when life really kind of flipped around and changed.
Okay, so what was there a bargain you made with God where if I win, I will, you know, never be gay? Or like, was there a bargain, or what did winning mean to you in terms of God and your Mormonism and spirituality?
I just felt like if I were to have won, it was never like I won't be gay. That was never a trade-off. That I never played that card. But I did do this. I did say, you know, if you let me win this, I promise to use my talents for good. I promise to, you know, I think I can say this, in my patriarchal blessing, it's kind of crazy, actually. It's one of the things that actually kept my testimony really strong for a very long time. It literally is an order where it says, you know, I've been born of this, born of that, and then my mission I will love, and I'll continue my work traveling the world. And people around the world will know my face.
Wow.
And know that I'm a Mormon. Hmm. And for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And they will know that I'm a man of God, and that no matter what, even though if time prohibits me from serving in regular callings, that the Lord sees it fit that I have a calling to set an example wherever I go.
Wow.
So having that in the back of my mind as I'm on a national television show that's now number one halfway through the season, I mean, that's not only prophecy come to truth. And not only this, but my patriarch, I just moved to Redlands. He didn't know me, didn't know I was a dancer, didn't tell him anything, because I was a skeptic of that one. None of my family had ever gotten a patriarchal blessing, so I'm like, this seems a little weird, but I'll do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's almost too weird to be coincidental.
It is a little too weird to be coincidental. And not only that, it says that that people will see me everywhere I go, and that I will constantly be in big crowds of people. People know who I am, and I'll continue that work throughout the rest of my life. Hmm. So I always kind of took that I will be always doing what I'm doing. And I still kind of feel that way. I do feel that, whether it's from a divine source or just my innermost person talking to me, I don't know. But
so in your mind, you weren't trying to ungay yourself in terms of like winning so that you could then marry a woman? And
no, I never thought that there was going to be like an ungayifying thing. But I thought, you know what, if I have this little nest egg, I won a lot of money, right? If I can save that, I will never have the added stress of money being an issue with my marriage to a wife. Because I figured, the psychology reports that I read, seeing if money is an issue and you already have SSA or same-sex attraction or same-gender attraction or issues with homosexuality in the relationship, it's already a bad thing. It's already a tough thing. It's very risky to survive in a marriage in the church. But if your finances are in order, which is obviously the biggest stress that most people have in most marriages, I can focus most of my energies into being faithful and showing fidelity towards my spouse. So I figured if I can remove the element that destroyed my family's marriage, maybe I can survive.
Okay. So you finish, so you think you can dance optimistic that you can find that woman.
I thought that was my ticket to survive in the church and to go to the highest level, the celestial kingdom.
So what happened?
Okay. So had a couple of girlfriends, had a girl that we were going to get married at one point.
And would you respond to them physically?
Oh, totally.
So you're bisexual then, or not?
Here's my belief.
Educate us.
Okay, Kinsey scale, right? Kinsey scale, for those that don't know, it's usually 1 to 6. Zero to six. 0 being completely heterosexual, 6 being completely homosexual. In my life, I have gone like this.
Okay.
So sometimes I'm leaning towards that 6. I've never been a 6.
Okay.
Right? But I've never been...
Meaning you've always had some attraction to women.
Meaning always to men. But
no,
some
no, no.
attraction.
No, I'm saying never being a 6 means that you've always had at least some attraction to women.
At least in a minimal sense.
Right.
A physical carnal attraction to women. Yes.
Okay.
So making out with my girls, that sounds polygamist and Big Love-esque. I'm sorry. but like making out with girlfriends, kissing, holding hands, for some reason, it would arouse me so quickly.
Okay.
So I knew that.
So what's the problem?
Chemistry is great. Well, that's what every bishop and every psychologist
I've
ever met.
I'm playing
you.
A role.
Thank you, Mr. Psychology.
I'm playing a role.
Doctor.
I don't mean it.
I know. So what's the problem? Well, that's a good hope. That's a sign. The problem
you're all set.
Yeah, you're all set. Not a big deal. Just avoid the other voice. Well, sometimes when someone's subtly talking to you and you have someone on a megaphone, the difference is startling. And the relationships I had, I've never cheated, never had a wandering eye, never dealt with issues of pornography during those times. I've a true blue Mormon, like you said, a nerd, in all senses of the word. With this, the last girl that I dated, somewhat after So You Think You Can Dance, we met on really crazy, awesome terms. To make a long story short, something tragic happened within our relationship. That happened mostly to her, but also to me. And it, 2 months into it, I knew I was falling in love with her. I really thought, this is the girl I'm going to marry. I never felt a huge confirmation, but I just kind of felt like it was never like a no, right? And I usually felt like that was the case with most girls that I dated. Like in a couple weeks, I kind of grow tired of it and lose that kinetic and physical, chemical attraction to them. But with this one, it never did. Never at all. She's beautiful and wonderful and such a great person. And we're still friends to this day. 2 months into it, I wrote her a long letter saying, listen, I told her everything. I told her that I was attracted to men that I'd never really experimented on other than when I was like a little boy before my baptism. And it's something that I plan on fighting the rest of my life. And I want to fight it with her if she was willing to do it. And I had signed myself up for extra counseling sessions. I was doing evergreen workbooks, which are interesting. And, you know, never once felt weird with my masculinity. So I felt playing the role of boyfriend was fine. You know, even to this day, I feel completely emasculated holding another man's hand, not demasculated. Is that a word? I guess it is. I've always felt like a man, like a dude, always. And that's never been an issue. Maybe it's because I've been a dancer all my life. I've always been the leader. I don't know if it's that or not, but it's just me. It's just my being, my makeup. And, but you know, that Kinsey scale changes and it fluctuates, but it's always leaning on the side of six rather than zero. And especially when I finally started admitting things about myself and it became prevalent. Well, after said tragedy, I don't really want to get into, but it was deeply personal for the both of us. And it shook both of our foundations greatly to the point she needed 3 months to travel the world alone. And I locked myself in a room and didn't eat and felt very depressed about, I thought I lost my eternal family again. Not with my parents, but with my own. And I mean, I had it this close. We were this close to getting married. And I felt like I felt in a weird sort of way, I put all of my eggs into that last basket. Like whatever I mustered courage I had left. Mind you, I'm traveling every weekend. But because of my So You Think You Can Dance celebrity status as a dancer, in my contracts, I would put a stipulation. I will be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, fly home Monday. But I need 3 hours every Sunday off. And I would go, even if it was a $100 taxi ride to the nearest stake center or building, I would go to church for at least sacrament meeting.
Around what year was this?
I won 2006. I toured throughout to the end. So 2007, 2008.
That's when you fell in love with this woman, thought it was going to happen.
2007, yeah. Okay. And every week I was in China or somewhere and I'd find a family group meeting of Singapore. I remember going to these places and it was awesome because it was the prophecy fulfilled. I would go there and literally people would, whoo, like they would notice you. And I never expected that because it's one thing to get dance enthusiasts of a TV show to scream your name. But walking down a street and then being recognized, it's a new world. And it's very intrusive, too. And I actually became much more of a recluse, which was probably a bad thing, because I'm already battling with so many inner demons. The fact that I'm shutting out even more people now and building tighter walls, I think kind of became my undoing as to why I finally kind of cut things.
Did the church ever try and, like,
reach out?
I don't want
to
say co-op or reach out, but I mean, were you ever sort of on the circuit for, like,
representing
the church?
Yes, but never from leaders of the church, rather from, like, media people of the church.
So what would they?
So, like, you know, the I'm a Mormon messages, or before it was the I'm a Mormon messages, it was just, like, Mormon messages, I think, or whatever. They wanted me to do one. A lot of Mormon movie directors asked me to do, like Mormon themed films, you know, and this and that. And I thought that was kind of cool, but I was so busy. I never could focus 3 months to film a movie and not do anything else at the time. And, so I was really focused actually my first year, other than dating this girl, I was actually more concerned because the next year I had to go back and perform on So You Think You Can Dance as the alumni winner. And I felt so undeserving that I took almost a whole year off of work. I made a lot of money, you know, from winning that show. And I decided to put it to good use.
More than just $100,000.
Yeah, because they gave me a really cool car that I just cashed out and sold back to the buyer, the dealer, and which actually paid for my taxes. They mutilate us in the taxes there, especially in California. But to make a long story short, I traveled the world and I trained. I trained in all these dances that I felt inferior in, came back a year later, and I'm hitting six pirouettes. And I'm
Is this just for one performance?
No, I just thought that was...
Were you on the show multiple times?
No, it wasn't just that, but I knew that I was coming back in a year. It's kind of like trying to get fit for your high school reunion.
Right, right.
Shedding those pounds and fitting into your old whatever.
Right.
And it was more that. It was more like, I want to come back and prove everyone wrong. Because, you know, only maybe a fourth of the population of this group, maybe a little more than obviously a little bit more than the fourth, voted for me. The rest probably hated me and resent me right now. And I'm going in a group of sharks right now.
But when they brought you back, was it for multiple shows or just for a single show?
Just to perform. It's always the first inaugural performance.
Okay, okay.
So I decided to go out there and I did a whole new solo. I did my thing still and I was running around the stage and doing my slides and kicks and all that. But I also, other than dropping my pants on National Flag Day or it was Flag Day.
Okay, was that not on the season two?
That was season three.
When you dropped your pants?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember thinking...
Sounds bad, but it really wasn't, but yeah.
Yeah, it was like... You had like the American flag in
I'm
your underwear.
I'm a patriotic person.
Yeah, but I'm thinking Mormon boy drops his pants, American flag underwear.
Well, think about this. Okay, first my pants were coming off, so I said, let's just do it. But that was a last-minute decision, too, where I just improvised it, kind of. But I had them on just in case. Anyways, if I wanted to, I had options. But long story short, I performed. The song was called La Americana. I had, like, red gloves and, like, a blue-striped sparkly tie. And I was in my element. You know, I was doing that, but I was also a lot better of a dancer. You know, in the other elements. So I showed flexibility and I showed pirouettes and I showed a little bit more technique. Even though I'm a lot better than I was then, now, I did work my butt off. You know, that starving artist never stopped in me. And to prove other people wrong, I wanted to convince the other three-fourths of the crowd that didn't vote for me that they had it wrong.
I'm just going to tell you that when you did that number and you dropped your pants, I turned to my family and I said, he's gay. I did.
Awesome.
I did.
Awesome.
And my daughters are like, huh? Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, we talked about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they had made a connection with you by that point.
Yeah, 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 for
and
sure.
So they're like, no, Dad. No,
no
Dad,
can't.
Shut up. You know.
No, he's our goal.
There you go again, Dad.
He's our poster child. You and your theories.
Yeah, I was making things complicated, Dad.
It's funny, though, because it wasn't about that. The idea was... is I kind of wanted to break free from that. I am this perfect person. I didn't want to have that insinuated. And also, I watched the whole season. I got really depressed about it. So, and I looked at it, and I just got really down on myself because I was a noob. I was a total, like, goober. And I am, but I also say a cuss word every now and then, or also speak my mind that I'm very truthful. And as a teacher, I'm very authoritative in that sense. So I just felt a little pansied. And seeing me on that season, I'm like, whoa.
You felt unworthy or just,
no, I just
inadequate?
Felt,
or?
I felt a little not me. Because they'll edit certain things to show the role that you're theoretically casted in, you know?
Oh, and what they presented as
yes.
you.
And I had live TV right there in my hand. And I'm like, let me give a little edge. You know why? Because I don't think this is a big deal. Because BYU swimmers, they'll wear Speedos. Mine were down to here. And they were American flag, and I made sure I wore two of the things of underwear to make sure there was no crevicing whatsoever, nothing you could zoom in on. So I was fine, right? But I also, what was interesting, I thought it was going to be comical because it was National Flag Day or something like that, or President's Day. But I did like 10 pirouettes prior to that to show my superior technique. Right? Like, oh, look at him go. I turn. That's what we do when we practice turn. Sorry. So I was turning, and literally dropped my pants on a dime. Right? And I thought it was, I'm like, look, I can still be a goofball. But damn it, I just did like an unbelievable feat. And they were outside pirouettes to the left, which most people can't do. So I was happy about that. I was like, yeah, I did a great job. And you saw like half the audience go, like, whoa. I remember I saw Nigel just do this, like, oh my.
He didn't know you were going to do it?
No one knew that I was going to do it.
Wow.
And for my dress rehearsal, I just finished with a turn. And
was he glad?
Oh, he loved it.
Okay, I thought he would love it.
Oh, it's ratings.
But in
know?
My mind, it was like, oh, he's had a year, fame's gotten to his head.
That's what most people took it
he's
as.
He's probably, you know, doing drugs and like had the party lifestyle.
Everyone said that. In fact, again, I got hate email finally.
And that's
saying,
not true, though?
Not at all.
So you weren't partied up by at that point? Or
no.
Ever? I'm not saying you ever have been.
Never. To this day, I've never done a drug in my life, John.
Okay. All right.
Never done any illegal activity. I've never participated in. Never. Mm-hmm. And I've never had a sip of coffee in my life, still, at 28.
Right.
So, or maybe by accident, maybe one time, but that's about it. And, you know, I
haven't either.
Rock on. Fist bump. Yeah. Okay. So, no homo. So I ended up, doing that performance, and I got all this hate email. But at the time, my skin got a little bit thicker, and I also wanted people to realize that I was a human being. I wasn't this perfect poster child.
You were uncomfortable with the
element
role
of perfection, yes, and,
but also with the role that they had, the picture they had painted of you.
Yeah, I was very uncomfortable with it because all of my friends know I'd rather. Instead of like watching ballet performance or working in a science notebook, I'd rather go to a Jay-Z concert and listen to gangster rap.
But the role was, it was clean cut, happy, fun,
nerd,
goofy guy.
Yeah.
That's how you've painted yourself here a little bit.
Yeah, but.
So what was.
But I'm also saying, damn it, an ass, and I want to do you. And I almost felt like.
But you weren't living that.
But I felt like I was projecting that I was like a unification, like I became a eunuch, theoretically. Like I Ken-dolled myself a little bit. Like there was no element of me being a man or a being. And at the time, I'd just recently broken up with a girlfriend prior to the girl that I was really involved with that happened right after the show, actually. And because of that, I felt a little sense of, I'm a man, I make mistakes. And I felt like that, if this is the last thing that I can say, I'm fantastic on the stage, I'm joyous, thank you for the moment, but I'm also a human being. And I felt like that was important for me to convey as much as I've become a better dancer.
Hmm. Was it to keep people from being disillusioned if you ever...
Yes. And if I ever did anything bad, no, it wasn't that. But, it, you know, there were times where I'd walk down a hallway, or I found out my wiener dog of 17 years, I was in an airport, Dallas airport, and this girl comes up, I'm crying my eyes out, I just found out she was killed. 17 years. That's like my sister, you know? And I'm bawling my eyes out. She's like, excuse me, can I have a picture? On my phone, crying in an airport. And I went, no, I'm sorry. And she cussed me out and said, fame has changed you and this and that. So that voice, I never took much heed to. And I never did that. I never felt that. Like I decided to come out of retirement from swing dancing, wanted to start dancing again, competing because it humbled me. It made me work hard. I didn't care about the glitz and glamour of it all. I didn't move to LA. I moved back to my hometown. I really kept it small. I really wanted that.
Jenny from the block.
I am Jenny from the Bronx. The block. The Bronx. Very much not like her. But anyway, so, you know, yeah, it was a lot of that. I was trying to show that I was imperfect because I felt like maybe I painted a picture of too much perfection.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. Music today was provided by the Saber Rattlers. Check them out at saber-rattlers.com. The Mormon Stories logo was generously donated by StudioCase.com. Thanks for listening.
Come, come, ye saints, no toil nor labor fear. But with joy, when you're